Hi guys, here's my morning routine. First, I drink olive oil, like a lot of it. That's good. Next, I take an ice bath.
Ooh, feeling super healthy. Can't fit my toes.
Breakfast is raw liver.
Okay, here we go. Oh, real good.
If your health advice sounds strange coming from a kid, maybe it's just strange. Signos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time. Signos.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast audio is adapted from my YouTube channel. I wanted to make my content more accessible for those of you on the go, and we all love a podcast. So if I ever reference anything on screen or a photograph, please bear in mind this audio was originally made for video. It won't hinder your listening experience at all, but just to save any confusion. And if you do want to go and subscribe to my channel, I'm just Georgia Marie over on YouTube. And with that, let's get into it. Hey guys, and welcome back. Or if you're new here, hi, welcome. My name's Georgia, and today we're going to be talking about a fascinating historical mystery, my bread and butter. This is a story which has made it into popular culture again and again in recent years, but nobody even knows if this is a true story. According to popular lore, a female spy known only as Agent 355 was a key player in helping win the American Revolution. She was an important member of a Manhattan Long Island spy ring dubbed the Culper Spy Ring. The myth of Agent 355 comes from just one passing mention in a letter written by Abraham Woodhull, and the story since then has captured people's imaginations. So who was Agent 355? Did she really exist? If she doesn't exist, why does everyone think that she does? But I think it's very important for this one to start with some history, some context to this story. Otherwise, I'm just not going to be able to do 355 any justice. And so of course, for that, we're going back to the 1700s and the American Revolution. Now, I'm not going to lie to you, going into this episode, most of what I knew about this sort of like snippet of history came from Hamilton. So I've really enjoyed looking into the American Revolution more. We're just not really taught about it in school here in England. I do want to do a full episode on the Revolution, but in a nutshell, it was the battle from the 13 American colonies to gain their independence from Britain after King George III just decided he needed more money to pay for the recent war against France, and he decided that he would get this money by taxing the colonies. In 1765, Parliament passed a law called the Stamp Act, which meant taxing legal papers, newspapers, basically anything printed. Obviously, the American colonies didn't like this, especially as they had no representatives in Parliament over in Britain. So they were just at full mercy of people an ocean away who weren't living their lives. A couple of years later, a man called Charles Townshend got Parliament to pass several new laws, and the Townshend Acts put taxes on tea, lead, paint, paper, and glass arriving in colonial ports. As you can imagine, this just further angered the colonists. Each colony, like I said, there were 13 in America, had its own laws and own governors, they had their own money, they were left alone to manage their own affairs for the most part. But now Britain wanted more control, and they said no, they wanted to rule over themselves. So at first the colonies protested peacefully, but in 1770 the British government sent soldiers to Boston, where on March 5th they fired shots into the crowd and killed several people. This became known as the Boston Massacre. The very same day, Parliament did do away with most of the Townshend Act, but they decided to keep the tax on tea. And then in 1773 they passed another law that allowed British companies to sell their tea more cheaply than the colonial people, prompting what became known as the Boston Tea Party. Colonists basically boarded the British ships in Boston Harbour and threw all the tea into the water. messing with the British and their tea, not a good idea. So the government just passed even harsher laws. They closed the ports of Boston until the colonists paid for the tea that they had thrown overboard. After this point, Massachusetts as a whole was just put under military rule. It was around this time that the colonists realised that if they wanted to take their own power, they were all going to have to unite. So in 1774, representatives from every colony apart from Georgia met in Philadelphia in what was called the Continental Congress. They urged Britain to cancel these new laws. And so in response, the British just send in even more troops. By 1775, there were more than 2.7 million colonists living on the east coast of what is today the USA, Massachusetts Bay down to Georgia, and it was becoming pretty clear that their issues with the British weren't going to be sorted out peacefully, although they did try at first. I mean, up to a certain point, most colonists didn't even necessarily want independence, they just wanted the British to listen to them and to their complaints, to take their opinions into account, maybe have representatives in Parliament. But of course, that wasn't going to happen. The colonies started to sort out their military and supplies, knowing that a battle was on the horizon. And they also knew that if there was a battle, a war for freedom, their chances of success were slim to none. The British military was among the strongest in the world, arguably the strongest nation in the world, but they were going to attempt to fight for their freedom. They were going to win or go down trying. The Second Continental Congress met in May 1775, and they brought together the militaries of each colony to form the Continental Army, and they put George Washington in charge. On the 4th of July 1776, the Continental Congress approved the Declaration of Independence, with the 13 colonies becoming united as the United States of America, as the battles against the British continued for the next couple of years. British forces occupied New York in August 1776, and then it would remain a British stronghold for the duration of the war. And this made it a very important place to have revolutionary people, spies who could collect intelligence from the inside to leak back to Washington and the Continental Army. And this is where I suppose we come into the true purpose of this episode, Agent 355 and the Cult of Spy Ring. Spies played a critical role in the American winning of the Revolution. It was this intelligence advantage where Washington placed all of his bets. And eventually it did pay off, but in the early days there was simply no reliable intelligence network that Washington could use. Because you see, it was pretty dangerous to be a spy in the Revolutionary War, it's always dangerous to be a spy, and so that's probably not a surprise to anyone. In 1776, American officer Nathan Hale had been hanged without trial in New York City after he was found to have been leaking British secrets back to his regiment. So the idea of being a spy made people nervous, they didn't want to do it. So when the army did find people who were willing, they jumped on it. Washington needed a spy network in and around New York City, and he started by turning to a man called Nathaniel Sackett of Fishkill. He was a merchant in the city, just a regular guy. Now, there's lots of different names and different people involved in this part of the story, which makes it quite confusing to tell, so I've tried to simplify it as much as I can without missing out on any information. Hopefully, you can all keep up. Washington then turns to a young officer called Benjamin Talmadge, who was a native of Sawtucket in Long Island, and he was to serve as Nathaniel Sackett's military contact. Talmadge had quite impressively risen through the ranks of the army over the previous couple of years. So the first spy to successfully gather information from the British on Long Island was a man called Major John Clark, who sent his messages to Washington through Talmadge, but eventually Clark left the island to go back to his hometown of Philadelphia. It was at this point they realised how invaluable it was to have a spy on Long Island. Washington knew that he had to find somebody to take Clark's place. Soon, Washington realised that Nathaniel Sackett just wasn't the best person for this whole spy thing. There was a lot more there, but it's not really relevant. They ended this whole arrangement. But this left Washington with a hole in his network. He was sort of trying to build up this really strong spy network, and it just wasn't really working for him at this point.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
But then on the 7th of August, 1778, Washington received a letter, and many people consider this to be the day the coal perspiring started. The letter came from Lieutenant Caleb Brewster in Long Island, who had already sort of assisted getting the messages from Clark to Tallmadge. He'd already assisted in some spy activities, and he was a childhood friend of Tallmadge, so they knew they could trust him. Brewster basically offered to Washington to gather intelligence on Long Island, but Washington knew that he needed somebody to sort of manage the correspondence here, and so he asked Brigadier General Charles Scott, who is a commander of the Virginia Brigade, to assemble a spy network, and he asked Tallmadge to assist. Very quickly though, it became clear that Scott sort of lacked the enthusiasm and the motivation required for such a job, so the whole thing just ended up falling to Tallmadge, with Washington asking him to recruit reliable intelligence agents in New York City. Eventually Scott just like fully resigned and Tallmadge fully replaced him as intelligence chief. As I previously mentioned, Tallmadge was from Sawtucket in Long Island, which is a settlement on the north side of Long Island, and when he was looking for reliable spies, he turned to people he'd known his entire life, his childhood friends. Abraham Woodhull, Robert Townsend, Austin Rowe, the previously mentioned Caleb Brewster, Jonas Hawkins, and more. In the century since this, historians have been able to identify more than a dozen members of the spy ring, but it was very complicated to do so because, of course, they all used aliases. They were spies, they couldn't just use their names. Benjamin Tallmadge became John Bolton, Abraham Woodhull became Samuel Culper Sr., Robert Townsend became Samuel Culper Jr., and so on. It's thought that Washington may have suggested the name Culper after Culpeper County in Virginia, where he'd spent a lot of time in his youth. And so, the Culper spy ring was born. The spy ring operated by using their sort of like personal relationships with each other to cover for their activities, and it worked really well. These people were all friends, some were family. They would use their business or family relationships to throw people off the scent. I mean, why would anyone suspect they were up to anything? They were just family members hanging out, they weren't sharing military secrets. But in reality, the system they used was unlike anything seen at this time. As I said previously, New York was British occupied at this time, so the spy members would find out intelligence information from British officers that needed to be delivered back to Washington. But they couldn't just go and like knock on his front door and share the news they'd found out, nor could they write things in letters in case they ended up in the wrong hands. These letters had to be transported through British territory to make it to Washington, and the letters would have been read. It all had to be, obviously, very covert, so Tallmadge created a code, a system of numbers that he assigned to 763 commonly used words. For example, the word injury was 311, mercenary was 603, language was 361, Long Island was 728, New York City was 727, and so on. Even their names had assigned numbers. Robert Townsend or Samuel Culper Jr. was 723, Abraham Woodhull, Samuel Culper Sr. was 722, Washington was 711. If a word outside the 763 was needed, a mixed up alphabet was used to create it. Then the coded messages would be written on paper using invisible ink, but on the same page they'd write this regular mundane letter, so if somebody did happen to intercept it, it all seemed normal. The sort of main player here, I suppose, was Robert Townsend, who was a shop owner and a merchant, but he was also a society journalist. He was a reporter. He was able to obtain information from the British at all these society gatherings that he went to. So Townsend would write these letters with the information he found out, and then he would give them to tavern keeper Austin Rowe, who would then take them to Abraham Woodhull, who would pass them on to Caleb Brewster. Brewster would then give the letter to Tall Madge, who delivered them to Washington. It was this whole sort of like complicated system, but it worked. So this was sort of like the inner circle of the Culper spy ring, but also their families were very much involved as well. It's believed that whilst there were no women in the inner circle, maybe apart from the mysterious Agent 355, women close to these men would play a vital part. For example, there was Anna Strong, a Setauket resident and longtime friend and neighbour of Abraham Woodhull. Although there's no way of knowing for sure, it's been long thought that Anna would post prearranged signals to indicate when one of the spies was ready to submit a piece of intelligence, and she did so using her washing line. For example, if she hung a black petticoat on her clothesline, it meant that spy Caleb Brewster was in town and in one of his hiding places. She would then hang a certain number of white handkerchiefs to indicate which hiding place he was at. Now, no one really knows how she knew when and where Brewster was hiding. Some things are just lost to history, and that is one of them. Woodhull would then see the signal and then know where to go to meet Brewster. There's no way of knowing today just how true this story was. It could be a complete myth, as there's no mention of it in any of the surviving letters. But we do know that the British suspected a woman of Anna's profile of assisting with Patriot activities. Anna's husband, Judge Seller Strong, was recently discovered in just 2022 to have also been an active member of the Culper spy ring. He mostly assisted with Brewster as he came into Setauket and let him and his crew know through very subtle signals how safe they were to talk, when they could come out of hiding, etc. So it's not out of the question that Anna would also be involved in spy activities. And I suppose it's around this point chronologically where Agent 355 comes into the picture. Today there are 193 surviving letters written by members of the ring, and only one of them makes any reference to a woman. It's a coded letter from Chief Spy Woodhull to Washington dated 15th of August 1779, and includes this sentence. I intend to visit 727 before long, and think by the assistance of a 355 of my acquaintance shall be able to outwit them all. Now 727 is the Culper code for New York, 355 is the code for Lady. Later research did indeed confirm that Woodhull was accompanied on this trip by a female, but who she was and the extent of her involvement in this still remains a mystery. Throughout the Revolutionary War, women were just not really considered to be threats. They were consistently underestimated and ignored by both sides. Good old misogyny and patriarchy. But some patriots realised quite early on that this could be a secret weapon they could use. Because they were ignored, it put women in a really good position as spies. They could infiltrate certain situations as cooks or maids and spy uninterrupted. And the women were willing to do so. It was one of the only ways in which they could actively serve their country during this time. The officers of the Continental Army used their wives to help pass along notes and messages to help fight the British, playing a vital part in the war effort, but they were always underreported, underappreciated. Women may have played a major role in the Revolutionary War, but as is the point of this episode, there's only one mention of a lady in the Culper letters. So let's look at some theories here, and I do want to stress here that these are just that, they are theories. There's very limited evidence that an Agent 355 ever existed. This lady was never even referred to as an agent in the letter, she was just 355. Indeed, members of the spy ring as a whole didn't refer to themselves as agents, they were spies and named themselves as such. Agent just isn't a word they would have used at this time in history. But it is still fun to speculate, who was Agent 355? Did she exist? Who was the woman who accompanied Abraham Woodhull on his mission to New York City? How much did she do to help? Possibly the biggest suspect for Agent 355 was the aforementioned Anna Strong, who allegedly hung her petticoats on the line to send messages. Many historians have conceded over the years that she may well have been 355. She may have been the lady mentioned in the letter. So if we look at this logically, the line in the Woodhull letter simply reads, "I intend to visit New York before long and think by the assistance of a lady of my acquaintance shall be able to outwit them all." The letter suggests that he was bringing a lady with him on his journey to New York, and this may have been to try and attract attention from himself. He writes, "A lady of my acquaintance. Woodhull and the Strongs were neighbours. He likely considered Sarah Strong as an acquaintance and then Anna as Sarah's lady, a lady of his acquaintance." However, for much of the time period that the Culper Ring was in action, Sarah Strong was actually imprisoned. He wasn't doing that much spying himself. Now, Sella was later found to be on Washington's list to be reimbursed for expenses incurred for Culper activities, but so many people have speculated over the years that the expenses must have been incurred by Anna instead. Sella just, he wasn't there, he was in prison. But of course, women in this time couldn't have their own money, so anything money related had to go through their husbands, even if the husbands were imprisoned. Maybe expenses were incurred when she was doing things like travelling to New York City along with people like Woodhull because she would be a pretty good distraction, an attention diversion from Woodhull. Maybe she knew the soldiers, maybe she had an in. Somehow he thought that she was going to be able to help him. And Anna had pretty big reasons herself for wanting to visit the city. As I said, her husband Sella was imprisoned. He was being kept confined aboard a notorious British prison ship called HMS Jersey. It's a known fact that Anna would often bring him food on the ship to keep him alive, because most prisoners would die from starvation if disease didn't get them first. This could very much be a link here. Anna had a reason to travel into New York City.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
However, this quite nicely links us into another theory, and that theory is that Agent 355 was held aboard prison ship HMS Jersey herself. Now, this makes sense in the linked Anna Strong. She would have been seen on board quite regularly visiting her husband. Now, it is thought that Anna did eventually get Sella paroled through loyalist relatives. They lived out the rest of their lives in relative happiness. But there are some historians who think there's evidence that Agent 355 was imprisoned herself on the ship. She wasn't just visiting. This information states that she had a baby boy aboard the ship and she died not long after. And after this point, after the point where she allegedly died, the Culper Report really happened to slow down. But we know for sure that Anna lived out the rest of her life not on a prison ship. She didn't die aboard the ship. So who could this have been? So we need to sort of like go back in time a tiny bit for the context around this next theory and talk about a man called Major John Andre. He was the chief of British intelligence who at this time was considered to be the most eligible bachelor in New York, which was good news for him because women were very much his weak spot. He loved women for what they could provide for him, but like many other men at this time, he didn't consider them as people in their own right. It has long been thought that if Agent 355 existed, she had to have been a member of a prominent loyalist family, colonists who were British supporters. This would have provided her with very easy access to both British society and officers' information. Which is where a woman called Lydia Darrah comes into the picture. In 1777, Major André held a secret meeting in the Dower House with other important British people. Lydia snuck up to the closed door, listened in, ear against the wood, and sent information about a pending attack to Washington. Lydia was Irish, she didn't like the British, she was not on their side. When the attack happened, and Washington was very clearly prepared for it, it was very obvious there had been a leak, and it had to have been somebody inside the Dower House, because that's the only place this information was spoken about. André questioned every single person in the household, except for Lydia, because he believed that all women held the same political views as their husbands, and he trusted her husband. Throughout the entire time André was stationed at the Dower House though in Philadelphia, the culprit reports were coming in thick and fast. However, they just so happened to cease when André left the house to go to South Carolina in December 1779. Letters from George Washington to Alexander Hamilton at this time complained that the culprit ring had suddenly become useless. Could the connection here with Lydia Darrah just be a coincidence? Maybe, but it is suspicious. The reports just stopped when André left her house. But as I said, André was New York's most eligible bachelor. He was constantly surrounded by fashionable women from loyalist families, any of whom may have been less loyal than she seemed. There were women everywhere he turned, and who knows what he told them to try and get them into bed. But then, in May 1780, André returned to New York, and all of a sudden the information started coming back in, and pretty big information at that. It said that an American general was in contact with the enemy and he was about to betray them all. He was allowing himself to be used to capture West Point, which is the most important fort in America. Sure enough, by the summer, General Benedict Arnold had gained command of West Point and he was about to surrender it to the British in exchange for money. British Major André was the one who handled the correspondence with Arnold, organising all of this, and he made contact through Arnold's wife, Peggy Shippen. Benjamin Talmadge would then write in a culprit letter that they needed to expect some sudden and unexpected stroke, and that the enemy would know well American forces and disposition. So who was Talmadge getting this information from? He knew what was about to happen. It had to be a confidant of André, somebody in his very close circle. Information about André would always cease when he left New York and then resume when it returned. It was somebody in New York and someone in close contact. It's rumoured that it was Agent 355 who exposed the treason of Benedict Arnold and led to the eventual arrest of Major John André, who was captured with maps of West Point and a letter signed by Arnold in his possession. There was no denying what was going on, that they were colluding. André eventually confessed and was hanged, but Benedict Arnold heard of the capture and was able to escape. As all this was going on, things were a bit dicey. It was just beyond clear that somebody close to André was leaking secrets. Many members of the culprit ring fled to New York and just went into hiding and then sort of like gradually came out a couple of weeks later. Abraham Woodhull wrote to Townsend to inform him of the arrest of several of their dear friends, including one who hath been ever serviceable to this correspondence. Basically, anyone who was close to André in British-occupied territory was being rounded up and questioned. They were trying to find out who knew what was going on, who was the leak. For reasons still unknown to this day, Townsend seemed to take this news pretty hard. He did not like the idea that people were being arrested and questioned. Upon hearing it, he travelled to Setauket and turned up at Woodhull's house in severe distress. He swore in that moment that he was going to stop spying and then suddenly went around stealing very large sums of money from every business he could, including his own father's. He stole over £600 in 10 days, which was a lot of money back then. But why? Why did Townsend suddenly care so much that people were being arrested? This maybe suggests more than just a casual relationship between himself and his informant on the loyalist side. Whoever was sort of leaking the secret, he was suddenly really concerned for them. And this is where we come back round full circle to the prison ship and to an allegedly pregnant 355. According to an October 1790 letter, a pregnant woman was arrested and questioned in the roundups, but she refused to reveal any information about her activities or about the father of her child. The rumour has always been that Townsend must have been the father, that he'd formed an attachment to her, a relationship, and was now desperately gathering money to pay for her freedom. As we know, the rumour is that this woman ended up aboard the HMS Jersey. She gave birth to a baby boy and died. I couldn't find any information about the baby, about what happened to him, but we were earlier talking about Lydia Dara potentially being Agent 355. She was spying on Andre in her own home. But Lydia Dara didn't die aboard a prison ship. She died in Philadelphia in 1789. If the woman aboard the ship was indeed Agent 355, she certainly wasn't Lydia Dara, and Lydia Dara was never pregnant by another man. But in terms of somebody being close to Major John Andre and sharing his secrets, leaking his secrets, she is a fantastic candidate. So who was the mysterious woman aboard the ship? We don't know. That's why she is called the Mysterious Woman. After her death, Townsend did continue spying, but apparently after this time, he was never ever the same again. He was depressed, he never got married, he drank way too much. Now this could just be general warfare, PTSD that caused this, or it could be the loss of his lover and his child, maybe. Others suggest that she may have been a relative of his who may have overheard things. Robert Townsend was very much the most secretive of all the culpable spies. He never even told Washington his real name, and his involvement in the ring wasn't even uncovered until 150 years later. So he was very secretive. We have no idea what was going on in his life. But at this time, Long Island, as I said, was under British control, and many families, including the Townsends, were forced to host enemy soldiers in their homes. Therefore, there is every chance that the person who leaked this information was a family member of Robert Townsend's, maybe his younger sister, Sally. That, I suppose, would make just as much sense as it being a lover. But what is clear is that out of the entire ring, Robert Townsend was undoubtedly closest to this woman, closest to this mysterious agent. He really was bothered when the British started rounding everyone up and arresting them and questioning them.
Want to try a free sample?
Oh yeah, I do. Wait, can something this small throw my body off balance? Time to consult the online experts. One bite will destroy your metabolism. Drink butter coffee instead to kill cravings.
Sensitivity.
One cheesesteak.
Stop it. Stop it.
They don't know your body. Only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Cygnos.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
And something else that we do know is that after this point, the culprit reports pretty much came to a stop. Their informant stopped informing. I do have one last theory for you though, and this is a plot involving an enslaved woman called Elizabeth or Liz, who was around 17 years old. The information around Liz's possible involvement has really only come to light in literally the last couple of years, but recent archival finds show that Liz was eventually able to find freedom, and she may have spied on the British whilst doing so. Now, I've already mentioned in this episode already how most men didn't perceive women as having any intelligence, so then just imagine what they thought of enslaved people. Enslaved people would have been privy to a lot of information. They were forced to wait on soldiers and officers as they spoke very openly, very brazenly about their plans. And it never would have crossed anyone's minds that they would then go and share this information. Recollections from a Colonel Abraham Gardiner at the time read, "A woman who lived at Abraham's house heard in passing through a room Major Andre say that if he must go, he would, but he did not expect ever to return. It was supposed to refer to him going to West Point." So we have it in writing that Andre spoke very openly about his plans at West Point. So we spoke a second ago about the spy potentially being Lydia Dara, that she overheard Andre in a meeting in her own home. But here in this letter, it's just referenced to being a woman at Gardiner's house instead. It's said that whoever overheard passed on the news and so on until it was shared with one of Washington's officers. But in documents from the time, the women were referred to as servants, which suggests that they may well have been enslaved black women. The way the letter says that the woman heard in passing through a room suggests that she wasn't a woman of social standing, whose ears may have been guarded from hearing such unfeminine war talk. No, this was somebody who was deemed so unimportant that the conversation wouldn't even stop when they walked in a room. At no point does Gardiner name the woman in his letter by her own name or through her husband's, and that historically is often found to be the case when it comes to enslaved people. Their names were rarely used in written documents. If men were referring to women, they would generally write lady, or they would say Mrs. husband's name, or just refer to husband's lady, whereas enslaved people just wouldn't have their names used at all, and that's what we see here. No name is used. Jumping forward a couple of centuries, in 2005, Claire Bellejo was conducting research for an exhibition about slavery at Raynham Hall Museum, which is the Townsend's old family home. In a collection of letters, she found the following sentence. If I see any of the officers, we'll make inquiry for Liss, though I think there is no probability of your getting her again. I am surprised that Colonel Simcoe would permit her to go. Since the discovery of these letters, people have, for some inexplicable reason, always assumed that the name Liss referred to a valuable farm animal, maybe a cow. A cow had gone missing, and now whoever was writing this letter was searching for her. But it quite clearly isn't talking about an animal, saying how Colonel Simcoe gave her permission to go. Animals don't need to be given permission to go anywhere, but you know who did? Enslaved people. Colonel Simcoe just happened to be a British commander who is historically known for being morally opposed to slavery. He would have been the type of person to give permission for an enslaved person to go anywhere they wanted. Now, historians at this time have no records of a person called Liss associated with any of the households involved here, so they just assumed it was the name of a cow, not of a person. But diving into her research further, Claire Bellejo then found a series of letters from 1787 written to merchants in Charleston, South Carolina. They read, "Robert requested the favour of you to purchase a wench named Elizabeth sent from this place." The letter describes how an enslaved woman had been brought up in his father's family, and during the war she became too fond of the British officers. Robert then wanted to repurchase her. Further research then uncovered that Liss was in fact a nickname for Elizabeth, a woman who was enslaved by the Townsends. During sort of 1778-79, Colonel Simcoe used the Townsend's home as his headquarters, and Major Andre also spent a lot of time there, no doubt coming across Liss as she performed her daily duties. And then when the British departed in the May, Liss just went with them. But it doesn't seem like she actually disappeared. The Townsends never put out a runaway ad for Liss, as was the sort of standard thing to do at the time. And through correspondence, it seems like Robert always knew exactly where she was, even having contact directly with her. In the time that she was with the British, her name also shows up a lot of times in the logbooks for Robert's store, him apparently making various purchases for her. Did he help her escape so he could plant her as a mole in a British household? I mean, it's even been proven that Liss was in Manhattan at the same time as Agent 355, helping the Culper spies outwit the mole, as was said in the letter. In mid-1782, Liss fell pregnant, it seems, and she asked Robert to buy her back so she wouldn't have to leave with the British army who were now evacuating the country. Robert agreed, and so she came to live in his apartment, giving birth to a son called Harry, who has been described as biracial. Was Robert maybe the baby's father? When Harry was 6 months old, Robert, with Liss's consent it seems, sold them both to a recently widowed woman, on the understanding that they would never ever be resold to anyone other than Robert. It feels so awful to be talking about selling humans, but this was the dark reality at this time. However, the widowed woman ended up marrying a new man, that marriage very quickly ended, and the ex-husband then sold Liss, without Robert's knowledge and without Harry, her son, to a man called Richard Palms in Charleston. When Robert found out about this, he was furious and he sought to get her back. He wanted to smuggle her back to New York, which he does successfully do. He went to great lengths to ensure that she was safe and she returned to Long Island as a free woman. The 1790 census shows that she then became a paid servant. She fought her way out. Liz was undeniably close with Robert Townsend, but then she left the Townsend house to live in a British home. She very, very easily could have been Agent 355. She would have been privy to so much information that she quite easily could have slipped back to Townsend. That's one thing about being an enslaved person in this time. She wasn't suspected, she wasn't noticed. Society didn't respect her enough to notice what she was up to notice if she was in a room. In a very twisted way, that made her the perfect spy. Imagine that, the legend that is Agent 355, the person that may have led to American independence, was an enslaved black woman. I hope with everything in me that it was Liz. If Agent 355 did exist, it was her, that this is her legacy. If I had to place bets, I'd say it was Liz, based on all the information I learned whilst researching for this episode. At least I really hope it was her. But there's no solid proof of anything. There's nothing to suggest that Agent 355 even really existed as an agent, let alone who it was. Code number 355 just referred to a lady. And would they have referred to an enslaved woman as such? I don't know, I'm leaning towards no, but also if she was risking so much, perhaps they would have had some respect towards her, especially if she had this connection with Townsend. The words Agent 355 were never said, just 355, a lady. Anna Strong, Lydia Dara, Liz, any of them may have been 355, but they may not have been Agent 355. Maybe she wasn't officially Agent or Spy 355, but I think, especially in Liz's case, we can say in hindsight that she was a spy just as much as the men, just not officially.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
I think what this episode teaches us is that women were a major part in the struggle for American independence. You don't need to create some sort of embellished tale to show women's contributions. It doesn't need to be this incredible legend that women might have actually been useful. They were useful just as much as the men were. Anna Strong and Lydia Dara really were women who helped with the intelligence. Liz was an enslaved woman who fought her way to freedom in a time that simply wasn't possible for so many. She was a woman who survived so much unimaginable hardship. Whether the history books want to tell you or not, women have been there every step of the way. Their stories have just never been written, so it does leave it up to the imagination. Women have always been written out of history, but that doesn't make them any less exceptional than the men. Whether there really was an Agent 355 or not, women helped win the revolution. Women have always been 50% of the population of this earth, but they only occupy about 0.5% of recorded history. 0.5%. And that's just given me another fantastic idea for an episode I want to film. Why were women written out of history? I think it's proven that up until about 3,500 years ago, women were just as much as part of history as men. Like, archaeology proves that. Then for some reason, about 3,500 years ago, they stopped being written about. I'm going to make that episode. Thank you so much for watching today. I really hope you enjoyed this. I hope you found this as interesting as I did. If you have any other theories or ideas as to who Agent 355 was, then please let's talk about it down below. Honestly, I found this one so interesting to research. And I will see you in the next one. Bye, guys.